Joe Harris has been turned on to solar astronomy at the time of the big eclipse in 1973 in the desert when he was in Mauritania. And since that time, he's been to a number of other solar eclipses. He's taken a lot of people along with him on solar eclipses through the commercial expeditions that he's been in charge of. He's viewed quite a number and total eclipses and a couple of annulars himself. And I look forward to his inspirational talk.
Thank you, Jay. Really appreciate that. Before I start my formal remarks, let me just say that, number one, as everyone else has wanted to say today, really appreciate the hospitality that Krupp and everybody at the staff of the Griffith Observatory has extended to us over the last 2 days for this conference. It's also nice to really see a lot of familiar, I won't say old, but familiar faces through the years that have had the pleasure of joining me in various adventures throughout the world to do this. As I say, also before I start my formal remarks, let me say that Brendan's comment about understanding what various impacts or inferences of quantum mechanics might have reminds me of I actually exchanged an interesting email with Brian Green a number of months ago, wanting back or harkening back to one of the episodes of Nova that covered his very excellent book, The Elegant Universe, where he has a scene in there where he goes into the Quantum Cafe and he attempts to order a drink. I believe it's a Harvey Wallbanger. He asks the bartenderess for that, and instead of saying, "Sure, I'll take care of that," or coming right up, her answer is, "I'll try." I think that's pretty appropriate in terms of when we start looking at things on a quantum level. I'd like to start by quoting some text from a gentleman who I largely regard as my mentor in terms of solar eclipse, involvement with solar eclipse, you will, chasing, to use the vernacular. This is from the seminal book, Our Sun, by somebody certainly who Jay knows very well or knew very well as I did, had the good fortune of knowing. That's Dr. Donald Menzel from Harvard Observatory. I was part of an expedition that Don and also, among other people, Harold Edgerton from MIT was involved in 1973 when I went to my first total solar eclipse. The preparation of an eclipse expedition entails a vast amount of work. There are problems of exact calculations of the path, the examination of weather records, the picking of a site, questions of transportation, and the securing of necessary facilities such as electricity or water. He goes on to say, Don says, that the more inaccessible the site, and eclipses seem to have a pervasive habit of hitting desolate regions, the greater the necessity of providing for all possible contingencies. Well, I think those words are as true today as when Don first wrote his textbook many, many years ago. And I'd like to kind of give, and for those who are unfamiliar with some of the talks I've given, I want to assuage people's concerns. This is going to be, number one, if you will, kind of a 40,000-foot altitude talk about the last 30-plus years of eclipse chasing and eclipse observation, at least from my purview and my experience. It is definitely, decidedly, to again assuage anybody's concerns, not going to be a commercial or an infomercial. I don't believe in doing that. This is a conference where people are both sharing personal insights and experiences as well as hardcore scientific data. So as I say, I want to kind of assuage anybody's possible concerns that way. But I do want to talk about how I, certainly over the last 3.5 decades, I've seen some things change quite a bit in terms of what's going on. As soon as I can figure out how to get this guy to shift down.
That way.
Okay. It's one of 4 buttons, and I guessed incorrectly. Well, how I started pursuing or chasing eclipses, as you can see, I actually was a member, as I said, of Don Menzel's subgroup, if you will, and part of a contingent of a company that actually still exists today, but not in its original form. It was, as I say, in conjunction with both National Geographic and also of Harvard Observatory, with a company at the time called Educational Expeditions International, or EEI. It is actually now called, and they still exist as a company firm, whatever you want to say, an entity now called Earthwatch. based outside of Boston, Massachusetts. I learned about, as you see here, interestingly enough, one night during my graduate work at USC, I was preparing some papers and some work for a class. I happened to turn on Dick Cavett to show you how long ago this is. And indeed, Dick had Bob Citron, who was the founder of EEI, on his show that evening, talking about what EEI's mission was, to involve both students and also, to a certain extent, lay people in the study of various natural phenomena, archaeological kinds of explorations and other things, and yes, indeed, even solar eclipses. Since then, as you can see, and as Jay alluded to, I've had the good fortune and pleasure of pursuing 14 other or 15 total solar eclipses throughout the world over various years. You can see by this graphic I've got here, just to kind of give you a quick overview, once again, a really high altitude, literally, view of some of the places I've had the pleasure and at times the challenge of visiting to go see a total eclipse of the sun throughout various places in the world. Indeed, there is, I'm sure people are looking at that one kind of yellowish looking star down in the southern part of South America. The one time I did actually fully get clouded out right there was at sunrise in the eclipse of June 30th, 1992, where we just, so to say, missed seeing that one. Of course, remember that time of year in the southern hemisphere, it's just the start of the southern winter season, so it's a little tough to be able to necessarily see that event, and indeed, it was a gamble. Of course, as Ed Krupp likes to say, this is one of the most benign forms of gambling that one can engage in and still be able to talk about it and not end up in some kind of trouble, other than maybe financial trouble. So, again, the point being that these things happen, as we all know, various places throughout the world. Well, with all apologies to James Joyce, the author, I stole from him a little bit, certainly a picture that captured some of the time we were in the Sahara Desert, just outside of the town of Akjoute in Mauritania in 1973. Certainly a lot of miles and a lot of years have passed from the time Dave Cortner took that picture. Certainly I know I've changed, and some of the people even more recently in this room, the hair's gotten a little thinner. In my case, it can't get much thinner. It's gotten a little grayer. Some of us, our faces have gotten broader, and other parts of our anatomies have also kind of gotten a little wider. So again, this is certainly a testament to the passage of time. Well, to reflect a little bit, talking about, again, the long view, if you will, of how I think this hobby, this avocation has changed in 34 years, certainly from my viewpoint, and I think others in this room would concur with a lot of this. You can see it here. Certainly, there's a lot more choices as to how you can get to an eclipse, whether you choose to do it on your own independently, or indeed even do it through the auspices of a formal organization, of which today, certainly, there's a plethora of them, as opposed to 25, 30 years ago, there was literally, you could count the number of people that do this kind of travel on one hand. Chasers, there's no question, and again, I know people like Len Schneider in the audience and others will concur with this, that back then, 30 plus years ago, many of us were considered, I think, to be on the edge, kind of fringe folks that would do anything to amass a few moments or a few seconds of totality, and proudly would talk about how many minutes of realization we have, and I think that's continued to some extent, but indeed, as I say, I think everybody now, it's wide open, it's open kimono, and just about everybody participates in this hobby who really has even a passing interest in it. The standard back then, of course, 35 millimeter and 8 millimeter film for movie cameras really was the gold standard. Things have changed a lot since then, there's no question. Today, people largely, to a large extent, use digital methodologies, or if they still stick with classic emulsion type film, they then very quickly move through manipulating those images and either stacking them or doing other things digitally such that they pull more data. They pull more data out of those images. As you see, certainly back then, three decades or more ago, if you wanted something other than vanilla flavored images with something like Kodachrome or Ektachrome, you really had to do something yourself. And if you wanted very fine detail, say in the sun's corona, etc., it really was a happy hands or loving hands at home type of situation. You had to do it yourself. You had to either build your own custom hardware and or use techniques that you had developed, or even were common techniques such as dodging and burning of various images and negatives to be able to do that. And so things have really come a long way since then. Certainly there's a lot more competition. I think this alludes back to my earlier point, the first point about there's so many people now, either entities or individuals or both, who are trying to get to the prime places to go see an eclipse, that the infrastructure many times is at least tested a little bit, if not severely so. I think it will be interesting in 2010, for instance, the number of people that want to go to Easter Island, how many people are going to actually be able to get, quote, hardcore accommodations there versus some other methodology of being able to stay there and sleep there. There aren't a lot of choices in a place like Easter Island. Well, again, some other ways which I think people have talked to almost into the ground today about how this avocation has changed over the last three decades. It's no question. It's easier in some ways with the advent of even more flights and jet aircraft taking people here and there. It's certainly a lot easier than you heard Bill yesterday talk about and Tony talk about this morning, where some of, if you will, our predecessors, our antecedents, really had to go through months, if not weeks and months, of arduous travel to get to the path of an eclipse. And again, of course, weather is still weather, as Jay would say. Climate is what you expect, and weather is what you ultimately get on the day of the eclipse. There's no question that Fred's fine work and the really tremendous body of knowledge that he has assembled over the last three or three and a half decades has really made a tremendous difference for those of us who organize these kinds of adventures, and whether, again, for ourselves or for others. The same thing for Jay. I think that, no question, people of Jay's ilk who have been able to put together synoptic weather data and indeed make this available to all of us as just in the public domain to be able to find out where some of, if not the most prime spots for observing are. This has taken, I won't say a lot of the work, but it's certainly taken some of the work out of this kind of decision making. And I think that's a real difference between today and what things were like, certainly when I started doing this back in the earlier mid-70s. Well, I talked for a moment about accommodations just to give you a little bit of, if you will, a whipsaw on some of this. Picture, once again, this happened to be by David Cortner, my tent mate, in 1973 on the EEI trip. You see the red oval there. That's just to be different, we made our tent a little bit of a different setup. And Dave, with his inimitable humor, said that we like to call that tent. We had quite a bit askew, a little bit of a wordplay there. And yet, when you look today, with, again, the advent of being able to take even a short couple hour or less jet flight into, or even a short, hopefully, drive, if you're just outside the path of totality, it's not that hard to find fairly cushy accommodations. Maybe, I think, in the same token, or by the same token, maybe this is a reflection of a lot of us, I think, once again, who are getting long in the tooth. We're not the kind of people that necessarily want to spend two, or in the case of us 35 years ago, almost 35 years ago, 3 weeks in the Sahara Desert when it's 120 degrees out and you're drinking bladder water. That's what it was called. It was in these big yellow plastic things that didn't necessarily mean that's where it came from, but it tasted like it. And eating hardcore hardtack sandwiches with cucumbers in them. I think a lot of us certainly have passed our fifth decade aren't exactly eager to do that these days. So such as this set of accommodations in Victoria Falls in Africa really show, I think, that a lot of us are not quite roughing it. Interesting shot, Dennis DiCicco, my good friend and associate from Sky and Telescope magazine, shown his setup in 1973 in Mauritania, and is leaning over his custom-made setup with three K38 aerial cameras that he purchased and then modified for his use with his three Hasselblad cameras you see there. And you can see, of course, the car battery down there at the bottom, as well as this music box kind of contraption gizmo that actually drove and was, in effect, the analog form of program that he ran for all three of these cameras that he had back then. And it was quite a contraption. It worked really well for him. But just amazing when you see that kind of hardware and that kind of, quote, technology compared to today when you set up and go to an Eclipse where, once again, it's pretty readily, things are available in terms of hardware. You know, you get a standard off-the-shelf type of spotting scope from a place like Meter Celestron, a little bit of a modified, in this case, tripod that's pretty darn stable. But then again, either a digital or even a classic SLR camera, things are pretty simple. It's pretty easy to be able to set up and not have to bring 5 tons of material with you and worry about where you're going to power this stuff up. Well, taking a break for a moment, saying all this that I have for the last 10 minutes or so, I know, and I've talked to even casually people like Steve Edberg, who's certainly got close to, if not in excess of, the same experiences I've had over the years. And one starts to wonder after about the 11th or 13th eclipse, why do you keep doing this? It pretty much goes through the same series of phases, the buildup, the run-up. Why do it? You know, you're going to see kind of the same thing, even though, of course, they all sort of look different in terms of the shape of the corona, other kinds of effects and phenomena. Excuse me, you may or may not see. So why keep doing this? Well, personally, I can tell you it's challenging work just to plan and think about where you want to go. And if you happen to have some people in tow that decide they want to go with you, that's certainly not mean work. It is something that takes a little bit of thinking. I think it's intellectually stimulating. I think that, and I'll talk about more of that as, if you will, a template for really trying to be able to stimulate those who aren't involved, like many in this room are, in the sciences or in technology or even in engineering, as I am, that this really is kind of a good launching pad or springboard for people and continues to be for me. And I'd like to think in some ways it was maybe part of what, if you will, impelled me to go back to school back in my mid-40s to finally, if you will, realize that I was probably, and probably in no question about it, a geek at heart, and I really should stop being an ice cream salesman and showing people how to run ice cream stores and become what was probably in me to begin with, and that was an engineer. It's certainly a labor of love. I don't do this, and as I say, take people in tow because I need to, because it's a business that I pursue full time. I do it because I really want, and I know in some ways without taking words out of Fred's mouth that I think it's similar, that many of us in this pursuit do this because it really is a thing that we love and we want other people, especially, again, in many ways, the lay public, to be exposed to. I think it's a terrific vehicle for those who don't have a lot of scientific or technical acumen to be able to learn about the heavens, the universe, and how things work, just the mechanics, if you will, of the solar system. Well, and to that end, I personally, it's just a personal thought, I happen to believe, as I say here, that it truly is, in many ways, ladies and gentlemen, the single best means to engage people about what goes on in the sky, and certainly in terms of astronomy. It's also a great way to get people to think about what our place in the universe is, and kind of turns the tables when you think about it in regards to the fact that something is happening up in the sky that we have no control over, and yet it isn't something whose time constant is so long that you have to be so patient that you're waiting on a time scale of days, weeks, months, whatever. This is something that happens really darn fast, and it is quite dramatic, and I think to that end, it really serves to rivet people, even the lay public, in terms of that, to really be involved. Well, certainly I think everybody, once again, in this room, and I'm sure that, again, Patrick would concur with this, and many others who have done this for any time and have brought together this community as we have for this conference, you really meet some great people at eclipses. As you can see in this collage, we've had the good fortune over the years to have some really nice people, just lay people and other people who are somewhat recognizable, join us to do this. People who you wouldn't normally think of, even if they're just playing a role in some medium to supposedly know something about technology or science, to get involved in this and also see the impact it has on them once they've witnessed totality and what it's done to them. And as I say, we continue to see that, especially for, as many of you know, the term we finally use for eclipse virgins. People have never seen totality before. It really does have quite an impact on them. And as I said a moment ago, there's no question. Eclipses, and certainly total eclipses in particular, they are all the same, but they are all different at the same time. Things look different. The corona certainly changes its form, and the various things that attend an eclipse do happen in some degree or some element at every eclipse. But it's always interesting to kind of wonder what it's going to be like that next time. And remember, the venue is always changing. So even though many of us have seen, once again, 12, 13, 15 eclipses, to see it in a new place, in a new environment, with new culture and new people, is something that is probably the thing that I think keeps many of us coming back to again and again. Well, I want to also kind of, as I say, since we're going back and forth in time here a little bit, I'd like to share a little bit of some video. It's actually an excerpt, a clip from a film that Bob Citron and National Geographic put together in 1973, called Solar Eclipse 73. And again, there's no question, some of the short bit of narration that's in there and some of the other things are a little dated, but also I think there's some interesting drama and some kind of clever and cute stuff in here that you might find interesting. See, Don was, again, even after many, many eclipses, he was always enthusiastic. I had great admiration for him as well, being in those conditions, again, the end of June, beginning of July, in Mauritania in the Sahara Desert, at usually typically high temperature during the day of 115 to 120 Fahrenheit, putting up with that in his late 70s and early 80s. Don never melted. He never shirked from his enthusiasm. And I think that was a great template for me, certainly, in terms of one's willingness to go as far and in whatever conditions necessary to do that. As I say, some of the narration's a little corny, but I think that it shows you how, once again, even a professional like Donald was really involved in that. On the other hand, and I know this has been a little bit of a poke fun and a poking time with for Greg Buchwald in this group here. On the other hand, people even today, or even 8 or 10 years ago, when they see their first eclipse, have interesting reactions and how they respond to it. Let's see if I can get to
hopefully it won't work.
Oh, sure. Have faith. Oh, ye of little faith.
Okay, I haven't seen it. I already want a copy.
Yeah, that's good. Hold on. It'll work. It's slow. It may be slow, or it may be... Hold on. We could launch it from the other thing, too, if you want. Yeah, from the actual file and the deal there. It's in the patience, folks. It was the... No, the other one. That's the one. Right here. There we go. Sorry, guys. It should work now. Yep.
Lit off the sun. It's fantastic.
Well, as you can see, with all due respect to Greg, and I was in Venezuela in 1998 in the Paraguayan Peninsula. Once again, everybody, even for their first time these days, thanks, appreciate that, Patrick, that people really do have quite a reaction. You heard, of course, also some of the local guides with us in the background. Interestingly enough, and I know Greg's told this story many times, we had some really huge bus drivers that were taking our group of about 75 or 80 people around. Interesting, afterwards, Greg was mentioning to me, and other people had noticed this, big burly bus drivers, Hispanic or Latino bus drivers, who were taking us from venue to venue, actually were crying, and actually had been crying after the eclipse. It was so dramatic. They were so struck by what they saw. So these big, you know, macho, literally macho guys, were in tears. So I think this affects everybody for various reasons, either personal or otherwise. Well, I wanted to talk now, do something a little different, and you know, people, maybe the hair on the back of their neck is going, or are going, whoa, what's going on here? I wanted to talk about a challenge, and I think in some ways, let me just give a caveat here, that I think a number of folks in this audience who do any of these kinds of organizing or do any of this organizing for trips, whether themselves or especially for groups, may already pursue this, but I'd like to, in a friendly way, and it is meant in a friendly way, put down on the table a little bit of a challenge to people who are here today, and especially for, as well, some of my colleagues who also happen to be involved in the business, if you will, and the serious business in some cases, of putting together some of these groups and expeditions. Well, I'd like to announce today the creation of what I'm calling, and hearkening back with all due respect to Bob Citron, Brian Rossborough, and Jane Fisher from the original EEI. I've stolen that acronym now. Something I've learned to do in my work in aerospace is to create something also called another form of EEI. In this case, it's the Eclipse Expedition or Eclipse Education, excuse me, Initiative. Basically, folks, what the driver here is, that I think it's time for those of us who have been in this pursuit, in this hobby, if you will, to start to turn things upside down here, as you see here, to continue the legacy that many of us have been involved in for many years, for a lot of years, to use and to apply these events in a more formalized way to generate more interest in science and math and technology in our young people. Especially, let me get a little U.S.-centric, and please forgive me those of you who are guests here as part of the conference from other countries. Everybody hears, and the media is rife with stories about how, especially in the United States, our young people are almost allergic to being involved in careers to a certain extent in science, technology, engineering, those kinds of things. And then remember I said earlier that certainly in my humble opinion, I think that eclipses and astronomy, of course, in a more broad sense, are really great vehicles to engage people that way. Well, to that end, I think that this particular initiative is a great vehicle to start to engage at least a young adult. A young adult, in this case, I'm defining as somebody of undergraduate college age, at every eclipse event to try to nurture their interest in, again, the thing that we love so much, not only astronomy, but also, of course, specifically in that special kind of occultation, namely an eclipse of the sun. So to that end, for each expedition I'm going to be involved in, from this point henceforth, we will have, starting in 2009, we will have one college-age person who's engaged in their studies, will be selected by a committee that we will form, that I will be helping with, to participate in that next expedition, wherever it is in the world, to participate in that trip free of charge. Because it's my personal opinion that I think that this is a way, folks, of putting something back into the system. We all, I think, are very familiar that we've gotten a lot, derived a lot of personal satisfaction, a lot of personal enjoyment out of doing these trips and being involved either as, if you will, subject matter experts or as people even staging these things. Well, I think it's time to really turn things upside down and try to give something back to what's out there. And the challenge, as I said, it's meant to be a friendly challenge, and I know that there are some people in this room that, in a, if you will, sort of informal manner, do this to some extent, but I say that I think a little organization, a little more formality isn't a bad thing, that I would say that, again, we would invite, maybe it's a better word than challenge, other folks that do this, such as the organization I'm involved in, others who I won't mention because we all know who they are, that they do a similar thing. They emulate this and they follow suit to do this. I think, once more, it's a great way, a terrific way to rivet and engage young people, even though, yes, it's an N of one, to be able to really foster an interest and perhaps even a future dedication or decision to move or go into the sciences and or the technology as such. Sure, a lot of us in this room, ladies and gentlemen, go out and do public outreach. We do start parties. I know I do it. I know many people in this room have done it. I know when I worked as a part-time staff member and guide member for Ed, it's the observatory, we did bunches and bunches of these outreaches. But I think that the power of this, folks, is not just when one organization or one individual does this, but when you multiply that, and it's not, if you will, arithmetic, it becomes geometric when we start to do this on more than a one-off basis. Well, certainly, as well, as I say, I think that a lot of us will agree, at least tacitly, if not in public, that there's no question many of us who engage in these trips in one form or another are doing well enough that it isn't a matter of money, it isn't a matter of revenue, and indeed, whether it's again done as, in my case, a labor of love, or for other people in this room because it's serious business, it's what they make their living doing, doesn't matter. The point is that it's time, as I said earlier, we plow something back into the system, we do something to make a mark, and I think this is a great way to do that, and to really, as I say, positively impact our youth. So I open the book and I open the invitation to those of you who have some, if not great, involvement in doing that, to consider emulating doing something like this. I think it really can make a difference. I want to kind of, as I say, give a tip of the hat to just a small cut set of some of the people over the years that have supported me, have inspired me, if you will, and helped me in terms of not only my hobby, but indeed even the last 20-some-odd years under the auspices of the organization, the business entity I've had, to help me do my job better. And you see their names here in black and white up on the screen and can read them as well as I can. And certainly, again, a number of them are in this room. Certainly at least one of them, as you see there in the middle of that graphic, is no longer and hasn't been with us for a number of years, but I'll say it again. Don Menzel really had a tremendous impact on my life, and I know certainly Jay would say the same thing, that it truly was a seminal kind of involvement to be involved in helping him in his investigations. And it's interesting, Jay and I have another thing in common, not only in terms of our involvement with Don, but the fact that we both were Shudder guys. You know, I was a Shudder man as well, as you saw in that video clip a few minutes ago. I was a Shudder guy for his spectrographic experiment back in 73, as you saw us ripping the cover off that spectrograph in Mauritania with Sal Ariccia and Jane Fisher, among other people, Clyde Cecil Cupp and some of the other folks there. So certainly there have been a lot of people here, and as I say, you know, in this room, who have had a lot to do with helping me and helping many like us to be able to do our jobs better. And again, for all the people, of course, that have participated with us, I know I'm very grateful for that. People have a choice when they choose to do these things, to go on their own or to join up with somebody else. And from time to time, various people have done that with me and with others. And I can tell you, certainly, I appreciate that. It's something that's been very gratifying. Well, with that, and I'm mindful we have about 5 minutes left, being an old teacher and instructor, we've got some time left, so maybe, Jay, we can take some questions.
Good. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Questions?
So we have a challenge on the table. Is that what the game show host is supposed to say? That's we need the proper music. Any comments, questions? Yes?
Yeah. Now we're trying to address this issue too in IOTA to try to get more young people involved in our organization. I just want to point out, you know, eclipses don't happen very often, but occultations happen quite more frequently. We don't have an eclipse in the U.S., for instance, where you could really get a lot more young people involved until 2017. But we do have occultations that young people could get involved with much sooner and more locally.
I encourage
everyone to use occultations. It's also an exciting expedition experience, not as dramatic as eclipses, but you can still get useful information from them, and that's and just getting data and getting any success is a great driver, I think, for young people.
And it's great engagement, I agree with you. It doesn't have to be an eclipse. Many of you have done outreaches, even having young people look through a scope of any modest or maybe even greater than modest aperture. I know I've had the experience where young people look through there, and the operant word seems to be whoa. One of them. And the other thing is, a lot of times I find them looking through the objective end of the scope, looking at the front of it, wondering if there's a photograph or a slide there. They can't believe that what they're seeing is real. So, yeah, I think that, but there's lots of vehicles. I just, and certainly in my experience, I think, among other things, an eclipse is a great way to hook and engage young people.
Yes, I saw the Sidewalk Astronomers out in Pasadena 2 nights ago, and I got a nice look at Jupiter and 4 satellites and the moon. Are you setting up a committee to judge this? Are you setting up criteria? How will you choose?
Yeah. That's a great question, Jay. What we're going to do is, at first we talked about the various vehicles to do this, and what we're actually going to do is we're going to go to, at least to begin with, a couple of local schools, universities, among others, since I'm out in the Los Angeles Valley area, probably the Moore Park College and or Cal State Northridge, and talk to them in their either astronomy or their science department. And what we've done, rather than make this random and try to do it on a random number basis or whatever, and have something like a drawing, which is kind of, I think, hokey in some ways, we want to have some criteria that makes it meaningful. So the answer is, we are considering doing, answer question, Jay, is to have the young people who are interested in this write a relatively short essay, maybe 200 to 500 words, on their interest in technology or potential interest in technology and science, and then submit that. And we will put together a committee of approximately 5 people to look at these and indeed judge from that, and possibly even add some other criteria to make the judgment for that. problem with doing it in a random or, if you will, a contextual way is it really doesn't have anything.
You showed a picture of a young machinist from the Harvard Observatory, Dennis DiCicco, in 1973, and he certainly got turned on from being on that expedition, and a lot of you know his work since then. I think Jack Dinner was first, and then Glenn. Jack?
You asked why people keep coming back to that place. Probably the ultimate reason is the most beautiful phenomenon in the universe. I saw lots of photographs of the Hubble Space Telescope, and nothing compared to the sun and the moon. In fact, also the Earth's atmosphere is just the right thickness. It would have been 10 times thicker or 10 times thinner, even if you wouldn't have to worry about the trouble of breathing it. You wouldn't have the same beautiful atmosphere as the orange, the yellow glow around the horizon. So Earth, the thickness on the Earth, not only are the sun and the moon optimized, Earth's atmosphere is also optimized.
So, as Jack has just pointed out, for those of you in the back, a lot of the beauties of eclipses and of the eclipse atmosphere, and that the Earth has an atmosphere that gives us nice phenomena at the times of eclipses. So there are lots of good reasons. Lenny?
Yeah, I think it's a spectacular idea and a great initiative. I think it would be very well appreciated, and particularly with the educational problems we've got, and I will say here in the United States. At the University of Arizona, clearly we have students who are not particularly well motivated in the sciences, if I can say that in a politically correct way. And I may ask Jay to comment on this. I noticed you were targeting sort of an age range in the college age, 18 to 23. It may seem a little controversial, but I think it may be a little late by the to really engage.
There's been some discussion about that.
Can I
and I agree.
That?
I think
yeah,
that's
please.
Sure. Well, my wife
may
be educated.
May I answer that? The biggest concern, and we initially when we started talking about it, was to get. Was to get younger kids, because every year Joel goes to a local elementary school and does a whole big start thing with the moon, and it's their school unit, and they look forward to it. The problem that we foresaw was that then you have, with 18 and older, they can go by themselves. And when you have somebody under 18, then you are dealing with the cost of the trip for the parent, and that could preclude people. But look at, Joel, how old were you when you went on your first trip? All right, so, in essence, I understand what you're saying, and that's part of the outreach, maybe, but to really be able to give a free trip needs to be somebody who can go without worrying about parents going with
supervision.
Them. Supervision, thank you.
Yes.
I think there are ways
cool.
to tailor that. I think
what
Patty says, I think, is accurate.
Yeah,
I think it needs to be considered.
Yeah, I think what you're doing is spectacular. I'm not trying to undermine that, but I think I'm glad you considered that.
Oh, we have. That was our first.
It needs to be considered in terms of maybe.
That was our first thought.
The bandwidth on that. I think you had a question.
Forgive me. I was just tempted by the discussion on why people keep going back to eclipses, and I just thought I would offer my own reason, because I just never get them right.
Jason, we can't beat that answer. Thank you very much.
All right, I'll be around if I answer your question.